Hi, welcome to Musings with Monse, a podcast where I have meaningful conversations with all kinds of artists. Musicians, poets, photographers, and other creatives share their honest stories, touching on the duality of being creative, the pure joy of making art, but also the particular struggles that come with it.
And honey, there's no way that I'll ever know. Oh, everything about you, but oh, how I love what I do. And honey, I love what I don't know too.
Hi there. In today's episode, I'm talking to my friend Tyler Knott Gregson. Tyler is a poet, a best-selling author, and a photographer. I really enjoyed catching up with him and talking about the importance of being authentically yourself, letting go of what other people think, and finding the miracles in the mundane, which is the title of his next book. Actually, technically, it's Miracle in the Mundane, but you get the point. So he also shares his struggles and what he grapples with and how he moves through that. And I really found this conversation inspiring, and I hope you will too. So enjoy.
Hello.
Hey, Tyler.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a bit.
I know. I was just trying to figure out when the last time we talked was or saw. I guess we saw each other when I came to visit you.
I think that would have probably been the last time, yeah.
Or maybe, do I see you at a book signing after that?
Yes.
Yes, that was it, yeah.
That was it.
That was it.
San Francisco.
Yes, yes. Oh, man, how have you been? I know you've been so busy and zipping all around.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. The nature of this thing is you never know where you're going to be or what's going to be happening, and then all of a sudden someone tells you something and like 2 days later you have to make something work.
Right.
So that's, yeah, it's, you never know. And you know, every day something new pops up and you just got to deal with
it.
You got to go with it.
Oh man. Okay. So just to introduce who you are for anyone who doesn't already know you, you're a poet and an author and a photographer among other things. Can you talk a little bit about how your story has unfolded and sort of what you're doing now?
Oh my goodness.
Loaded question, I know.
That's a big one. So I started writing when I was probably 12. And honestly, I am on somewhere on the autism spectrum. And so writing for me was basically the only way I survived all of school. And, you know, I was always that kid. I didn't have a notebook. I didn't bring the right books to class. I didn't have anything. And so I would bum a piece of paper off of somebody and borrow someone's pen. And that's what I would do all day, every day to get through school was just, I would write poetry. And it just kind of took off from there. And I never expected anybody to read it. I never expected anyone to find it. It was just something that kind of cleared out the clutter in my own brain. And then this crazy internet thing started happening and social media started happening. And people in my life encouraged me to share it on those things. And I was pretty hesitant at first, actually, because not that I was too personal, because I don't really have that filter. It was more just, I didn't think anybody would care. And so I did. And I guess kind of that was the first snowball that really started rolling down the hill. And now it's been all these years and the writing has just blown up and it's actually opened a lot of doors as far as the photography goes, because that's one of my biggest passions is photography, and getting and making a living doing that is really challenging because there's just so many voices out there and so many photographers that it's impossible to get seen. And having this network that has grown up from the writing, I've been able to kind of marry those two together. And I mean, if you would have told me 10 years ago, all of the places that we would have traveled and all the things we would have seen and all the people we would have photographed, I never would have believed you. Wow. And it's really neat to see how those two kind of, I don't know, they finish each other off, I guess. I always say that, you know, if I can't describe it in a poem, I have to do it with a photograph. And if I can't photograph the emotion or the thing that I'm really trying to capture, I have to write it in a poem.
That's so great. You have like two different outlets that you really, really like pull
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, they finish each other off pretty nicely. So
we're just talking about your two different passions, you know, in the arts and how you've been able to marry them. And I think that's really special. And I love that, you know, you were able to come into one via the other one. And
exactly.
You know, and you know, on that topic, one of the things that I really appreciate about you is that you use your voice and your platform, which, you know, I don't know. Well, how many followers do you have now on Instagram? Like a ton.
Oh, man. Like 350 some thousand.
Right.
I don't know.
It's a lot. So you use that to use your voice for good, you know, and you. And you have partnered up with so many different causes, I think, that are, you know, important to you. And I would love for you to talk a little bit about that, too. I think it's so important and special and awesome that you're doing that work, because not everyone would, you know, and you're really
sure.
Making a point to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the point of all this, I think the point of why we're here is to reach out and give as much as we possibly can to everyone we can possibly give it away to. And what's the point of building a network if you can't do good things with it? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I've been really fortunate, and I've paired up with a lot of charities over the years, everything from Two Wings, who's based in California, and they rehabilitate victims of sex trafficking, which I can't even begin to fathom what that would be like. And it's a foundation called The Young and the Brave, where they help families who are going through cancer, to Head Regal, who supplies blankets to families who are going through, or kids who are going through chemotherapy, to the Beautiful Foundation, to Write Love on Our Arms, which is an anti-suicide foundation, to, I could keep naming them.
I know.
Yeah. And it's just, it's cool because there's so many different areas and so many different worlds that I've been able, that have been passions of mine for a long time. And I think without this network and without this voice, I would still be doing the work and I would still be helping. It's just, I would feel a lot more like I was shouting into the void.
Right.
And so the nice thing about this is when you, now when I shout, people hear. And I think that is such a magic thing. And for all the ills and the, you know, the pitfalls of social media, that is one thing that I'm really thankful for, is if you do have a voice and you do choose to use it, people will hear it, and it will open so many new people's eyes and ears to it.
Totally. And I think you were sort of early on, and I think, you know, right now we're in a place which I'm very happy about, and that I think people are kind of shedding the layers and just being who they are, you know?
Finally. Yeah.
And of course, it's not everywhere, but, you know,
it's
definitely more palpable, I think. People are just,
sure,
like, feeling safe to do that. You know,
I totally agree.
And I think you were kind of more early on in that. And I love that about you. Even just as a friend, I think that's one of the things that drew me to, like, you know, like, want to be friends with you, is that you were just who you were, who you are. You know, I'm that way too. So.
Oh, you definitely are. Yeah. No, I think we're kindred in that way.
Totally.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was going to say, like, have you found that in being that way and being just openly vulnerable, and you really do put it out there, because, like, every single day you're posting a poem, you know, that's showing like a deep part of yourself. But, like, do you feel like that, you know, that in doing that yourself, you're kind of allowing other people to be more vulnerable themselves and feel safer to do that?
For sure. I think I consider myself pretty lucky, because I was born literally without a filter. And I don't know if that's part of, you know, the Asperger's or what it is, but I literally was born with zero filter. And in a million ways, I think I was also born without any real self-image. And so I don't really, and not in a negative way, I just don't really even see myself. I always kind of just feel like I'm this voice that's driving around this body, if that makes any
sense. Yeah, totally.
And so I feel like I was really lucky in that. And one of the most eye-opening things for me through this whole process is, you know, I don't see it much when I'm in Montana, because I live up on a mountain and I don't, you know, I'm pretty much a hermit. But when I go on these book tours and I go around the world to meet these people, it's been shocking and eye-opening to meet so many people that have said basically exactly what you've said. And that's a magic thing, because, like you said, we are in such desperate need right now, especially of honest and true voices, that if I play any role in that at all, I think that's the highest praise that you could ever give me. And I just think it's so needed right now. It's so important that people, they just put down, like you said, shed the layers and just be the person that they, I guess, would be if fear wasn't a factor.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that I really admire you for, that I don't know that I have this, is that, you know, I feel like you are just brave to be like, okay, I'm just going to be who I am 100%. And if you don't like me, then whatever. Yeah. And how do you, so can you tell me a little bit about that? Like, how, because this is like a tough thing for, I think, a lot of people.
Sure.
It's just being okay with people not accepting them or liking them, you know?
Yeah.
And how do you deal with that when, because so many people, you know, hear your voice. So how do you deal with it when people are like, you know, just being jerks?
Yeah, you just have to kind of expect that. And I think, to be honest, a lot of that comes from, I found Buddhism at a pretty early age. My dad brought home a book on one of his travels. He was in professional baseball, and he still is, actually. And he brought me home this book called The Teaching of Buddha when I was, I think, about 12 or 13 years old. And I was kind of a weird kid, and I read it, and I got hooked on it immediately. And then everything I could possibly digest about Buddhism, I tried to. And it's something that has stuck with me ever since, and I still follow and practice it today. And a huge part of that is just the idea that life, I mean, it sounds negative if you don't understand it at first, but life is suffering and it's pain, and that comes from attachment. And if you slowly but surely detach yourself from the emotional response that other people have towards you, you realize that there's nothing you can do about those things.
Right.
And if you let that go and you let it just, if you don't give it the power that it has, it really does set you free in a lot of ways. It really, it's such an empowering thing to understand that you can't control how people react to you. All you can control is what you put out. And if you're proud of what you're putting out, the rest will take care of itself. And, you know, you might lose some, you might gain some, but that's not up to you. All that's up to you is what you put out.
That is so perfectly said. You know, it's like, I think also, at least for me, I can say as I've gotten older, I've started to care less about what, because, you know, I'm like worried about why so-and-so doesn't like me. And I'm like, well, do I even like them? You know,
exactly.
Like, wait, like, I don't really like the person they are. So why am I so concerned about what they think about me? You know,
exactly.
I think that's an important thing. And when you look around and you see all the amazing people you have in your life, and you just realize you're not going to please everybody. And, you know, you don't really want to, you know, it's like,
no, if you did, then who would you be?
Exactly. You must be doing nothing with your life.
You're not standing for anything. You're not fighting for anything.
No, 100%. So I think that's just something important for all of us to keep in mind, you know, and just remember that just, you know, you're, by being who you are, you're going to attract the right people in your life. And that's all there is to it.
That's all there is. That's the secret.
Yes. All right. We're done. Good.
Perfect. Yep. All right. Solved.
Okay. So one other thing I wanted to talk to you about was your new book. I absolutely love the title, Miracle in the Mundane.
Good.
Yeah. It's just perfect. And another thing, I think I'm like, this is like the, like Tyler Munson show, why we are friends. But one of the other things I really like, I think that really connected us, was that the feeling of like both of us are the type of people. And I think most artists are, that pay attention to all the little details, and you can't ignore them because just you see everything, right?
No, the little details are the bigger story.
I think
that's where all the real beauty hides, is in those little things.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think about this a lot, you know, cause like I'll be walking down the street and just like, I'll get kind of fixated on just the beauty of the light shimmering on a leaf, you know, and
sure.
I become like, and then I realize what a like crazy person I am. I'm just like staring at it, you know, and I get so fixated on it. And I realize that the opposite of that, the downside to having that attention to detail, is that you feel everything, you know, you feel the good and the bad. And so I wanted to ask you if that's kind of how you feel as well, that you have that kind of duality there.
For sure. I mean, I think I learned a long time ago that crazy is just majority rules anyways.
Right.
And so, you know, if I'm going to be the weird guy that takes a lot longer to get from point A to point B because I'm seeing every possible thing along the way, I'm happy with that. Totally. And I think you're right, though. I think there is a lot. There's a definite, I don't know, aspect of feeling everything and feeling too much. And it's, I think what I've learned over the years is that too much is just always what people who have never had enough like to say. Mm. And so I would rather.
Yes. I love that.
Yeah. I would just, I don't know. I would rather be bombarded with the good things and the bad things and feel everything than go through life in this, I don't know, this kind of haze of just getting by. I think there's nothing more dangerous in life than settling. And
I'm right there with you.
Totally. Yeah. Everybody yeah. does it though. Everybody does it. Cause there's this perception of safety in settling. And my goodness, is that wrong?
I so agree with you. I think I remember a poem that you have that, like, I think I reposted it because it was something about settling and to never, ever settle. And I've always preached that, you know, because I believe it so deeply, you know, and I really do believe that when you don't settle, you know, and you just wait for the magic,
yes,
you know, that's, it comes, it always does. And, you know,
it always does.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think people don't realize that settling is just slamming a door shut. And totally. The more doors in your life that you close, the less good stuff that can come in. And if you just leave them all open and you wait and you just know that it's coming, it will come. It's just, you got to get there.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So Tyler, I want to ask you, who is someone whose creativity moves you?
Oh man.
I know, it's a big question too.
that's another one of those situations that list could just continue to spiral. Oh boy. Well, I mean, for starters, the person who brought you and I together.
Yes.
You know, he and I are like brothers. So Gregory Alan Isakov, so I can, in case I didn't say it out loud, we're like brothers, and it's really interesting to see the way his career and his voice and our friendship has changed over the years. And I'm constantly inspired by him. And I hope that feeling is reciprocated with him from time to time. But him and I'm always reading.
Yes.
I can't stop reading, but I don't know, there's certain voices that I keep going back to. Walt Whitman has always just been such a fixture in my life. And I don't know, whenever I'm feeling scattered or tired or lost, I think I kind of come back to that. I don't know. There's also a lot of new poetry voices, not new, but like new to me that I've been reading lately that are just beautiful. There's one, Ada Limón, who is just staggeringly talented. And
I don't know. What's her name? Ada?
Ada Limón.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I have to.
You'll really, really, really appreciate it. I think it'll be right up your alley. I
can't wait to check it out. Okay.
Yeah. But, great. And then I don't know, just every different world has different people who inspire me. And I think that's what's so fun is getting to see that. And that's what I like about my job and the way it's changed is just getting to travel around and meet so many different people who have so many different jobs. And so many of them are in the creative world. And it's really cool to find all the common grounds that we all share. And like you said, there is a strange similarity between artists that it doesn't matter what your medium is. Totally. You all kind of feel like you're in the same weird extended family.
It's so true. Yeah, you said it so well.
That's awesome. That's, I love it.
Same here. Who or what has been one of your greatest teachers in life so far?
Oh, my goodness. you know what? This is going to sound totally cheesy and totally cliche, but my fiance, Sarah.
Oh, of course.
And honestly, I mean, I think people say this all the time and they say it with hyperbole and they say it, you know, to be romantic or to exaggerate. But when I say this, I mean it. She saved my life, to be honest. And I don't know. I think a lot of the things that I've dealt with my brain and the strange way that I think, I always kind of feel like I'm right on this razor's edge of sane and crazy. And it's amazing because when I met Sarah and the way that she handled me when she met me, it really could have gone either way. It could have gone to this way where I became a hermit and I kind of just fell off the face of the planet and I isolated myself because I did that for years. And I don't have the right words to say thank you to her for saving my life in the way she did, because she knew the ways to bring me out of myself and to let me be what she knew and what I knew, if I would have stopped being so stubborn, was actually in there. And I just don't think I've ever met somebody who can do that for people with such grace. I think I've never met anyone, and you've met her, so you know.
Oh, she's wonderful.
Yeah, I've just never met anyone who has such, I guess, effortless grace would be the way that I would say it. Because, I mean, if I would have been me finding me, I honestly don't think I would have had the grace and the patience to shine that light back onto me. And so, yeah, I think honestly, that would be my answer. Well, and I feel beautiful. Lucky. Yeah.
I just say, I don't know many people that I've seen. You love her so deeply, and it's so obvious, not just from, you know, your writings and all that, but just knowing you both. And it's just like something really special.
We were friends for a really long time, and we were on two very different paths. And then we met each other, and, you know, we had a really wonderful friendship, and we were in two different lives that didn't make sense for us anymore. And, once both of our lives kind of changed, it even took, I think that's the beautiful thing, is even after our lives changed, it took a minute for us to allow all of that extra stuff to come to light and to give it the space that it deserved. And once we did that, I think that definitely that's when things really started unlocking and things really started making sense.
I love it. And isn't it like kind of like talking about like the little nudge from the universe? I feel like when you're, I don't know, just that the things find you at the exact time it's supposed to. So
they
it's
do.
Like, you know, maybe like you guys met and you were friends, but it wasn't your time to get
exactly.
together.
Oh,
and then it's like,
I
it
completely
came
agree.
I love those stories. Cause it's,
I know I do too. And it's funny when you rewind and you look backwards and you realize just what you said, if it would have been any other time, it would have probably walked you out of each other's
That's
lives.
Right.
And it's what a thing that is.
I know. It's a, yeah. Thanks, universe.
I know. Exactly.
Okay, so I won't keep you too much longer, Tyler. I just want to ask
you. That's okay. You're fine. You're totally fine.
All right.
No, this is great.
All right. So tell me, I think I told you all this already, but one of the reasons I started this podcast, one of the big reasons, was because I wanted to really have meaningful conversations with artists about the things that they have to grapple with, which, you know, you've already talked about a bit, and also how they move through them and how they get through them. So could you tell me what's in your personal toolkit when you're having a bad day or month or year? Like, what do you pull on to help you get through it?
Well, that's a great question. Like I said before, for me, words have always been something that are paramount. I think the way my brain kind of tends to shape things is it shapes everything into sentences. And whether it's an emotion or whatever it is, it starts with one sentence. And I kind of feel like I'm a collector of sentences, and they rattle around in my brain, and they're what get me through things because they almost become mantras. And then the moment that I put them down on paper, I'm able to let that one go. And then I'm letting whatever was holding me up that led to that, I let that go with it. And so that's kind of what writing has always been for me, is it's been my, it like writing and words have been that toolkit. And I think also the same thing with the photography. One of the biggest things is travel. Like, traveling has been such a massive force into helping me get through those hard times and helping me get through the days that I don't think are going to end, or the months or the years or the waiting or the heartbreak or the heartache. It's being able to go and see things and understand that your situation is just one tiny piece of a much bigger story and a much bigger tapestry of people who have it way worse than you. And I think that's the important thing to realize, though, is just because people have it worse than you doesn't mean you still don't have it.
That's,
you know,
right.
What I mean?
That's so important to say, I think, you know?
Yeah. And so I think the words and the travel and the images, and I think just the other one is just surrounding myself with people that feel more like fans than vacuums. You know what I mean? I think that takes a while. And it goes back to, like you were saying earlier, to to not being afraid of what people think of you and to not caring how they think of you, because the fans will find you, and if you're a fan to the others, they'll come back. It's just when you put vacuums in your life, all they do is just suck out every bit of good out of you to fill themselves up. And then you're going to be worse off than when you started. And so I think the who of who you surround yourself with is so important, especially as we get older.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember actually one time you and I had this conversation, like maybe it was on Greg's farm years ago.
When, yeah, it might've been.
Yeah. I remember talking to you about this, cause I feel like we both were just like really felt this deeply. It's like, I don't know, there came a certain time in my life where, you know, I would just like let anybody in my life and want everyone to like me and want to please everybody and make sure everyone was okay, you know? And there
exactly.
came a certain point that I'm like, I really started to pay attention about like when I leave someone's presence, do I feel energized or do I feel drained?
Exactly.
You know, and that like just the that simple thing and like paying attention to that and really learning that I can, you know, just let go of those people that make me feel drained and be okay with it has been the biggest difference in my life.
Oh, it's so liberating.
Yeah, totally.
It really is.
It's, yeah, I'm just preaching that because I think it's really important.
I think that's an important thing to preach. Yeah.
Totally. All right, Tyler. So I'm going to ask you, and you've talked a little bit about this already, but I'm going to ask you some of your favorites. You know, it doesn't have to be, I always feel like there's always pressure on this question, but you know, not the favorite, but a favorite, something that has meaning to you that feeds your soul.
Okay.
So I'm going to go with, I'm just going to say the thing and you tell me.
Okay.
All right. So how about a favorite book?
The End of the Alphabet by C.S. Richardson.
Awesome.
That was instant. Like I didn't even have to.
Oh, see, I didn't have to think about it. It just came right out.
Yeah, that was instant.
That's awesome. It's funny, you know what's funny. All right, how about a favorite album?
Oh boy,
yeah, that's a tough one.
Hands down, The Joshua Tree by U2.
All right.
I have so many memories associated with that. In fact, the biggest memory and the biggest person in my memory from that, sadly, he was my age and he just passed away this last Christmas, and it was sudden, and it was in Sweden. And the saddest thing is we still don't know what happened. We haven't heard the autopsy report. And so, that record, talk about nostalgia and like putting you in a place. That record is I can't even listen to it without being there with him. That's crazy.
That's beautiful, man. That's what music's all about, you know?
It sure is.
How about a favorite song?
Oh my gosh. That Moon Song
by
Gregory.
Sorry, I got excited because I remember that was both of our favorite songs of Greg's. And we were like, yes, we both love that song. And when he played it at Red Rocks that time,
that
was like magic, you know?
And then one other one is there's a song called The Wild Swans on the Lake by Foy Vance.
Oh, yes.
That's the other one.
Good choices.
Thank you.
All right. How about, this is sort of a big one, but just tell me like a favorite memory.
Oh my gosh.
I know you have so many.
I have so many. Well, and I have an eidetic memory too. So I remember like every sight, sound and smell from when I was a little kid, but
that's amazing.
All right. I have one that I always think back on. So it would have been 1992. So I would have been 11 or 93. So 11 or 12. And we were in Albuquerque, New Mexico. My dad was the pitching coach for the baseball team down there. And every night before the game would start on home games, I would be at the baseball park from noon until midnight every day with my dad. And right before the game, which was usually at like 7 o'clock, while all the fans were filling into the stadium, all the players were, you know, in the clubhouse getting ready, I would go out and I would stand in center field and my dad would hit me pop flies and there would be, you know, anywhere from like 4,000 to 14,000 people in the stands, and I would be all by myself in the outfield and he would be hitting me pop flies and I would be trying to catch them. And I remember if I dropped them, the crowd would boo me. And if I caught them, the crowd would cheer. And to just be that age and be in a situation like that with my dad. And it was just a really, it still sticks with me as such a funny and poignant memory, just that I keep coming back to. It's funny.
Man, that's so cool.
Yeah, it was a good time of life.
You've lived a lot of like almost different lives, you know, like the baseball life, and the poet life, the photographer life. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's been a long road, but lots of different twists and turns and highways and back roads, and it's been good.
So speaking of that, back roads and ways, what's one of your favorite places that you've been?
Oh my goodness. The Isle of Skye in Scotland.
That's where you're getting married, right?
It is. Yeah. We just got back from there. Actually, we were there for about a week in October, and I've just never been to a place that absolutely knocks the wind out of you every time you turn around. I've never been to a place like that. And, you know, I live in Montana where it does that a lot anyways, but I've just never been to a place that so consistently surpasses what you think is possible.
Oh man. Yeah. I've been to Scotland once, years ago, and it was just like, just absolutely stunning. It's just,
it's so magic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then what's like a place that feels most like home? Is it Montana?
Probably. Yeah. I think so. Although it's hard for me because I was born on the ocean and
right.
You know, I mean, even in my blood, like I come from Vikings and, you know, so right. I do miss the sea more than I'm comfortable with. But I still think there's something about the pace of Montana that just sets it apart. And there's just such a calm and such a space here that you can vanish and you can be a hermit. But then if you want connection, there's just warmth and there's just community and familiarity. It's a pretty magical place here.
It's so beautiful. When I got to visit you, I remember like, it's just such a little town. Like everybody knows everybody. Yep. And it's just like, feels like a little family. It's
one really degree cool. of separation.
Yeah. Totally. It's awesome.
It is awesome.
Cool, Tyler. Well, I will let you go. That's all I had. And this was such a beautiful conversation. So,
I loved it. It was so rad being to catch up with you. It's been way too long.
It really has. But hopefully we'll see each other one of these days soon.
We will. We will. Let's make it happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. And come visit anytime. You got a place to stay. So.
Awesome. That's awesome. Thank you.
Totally. Oh, you're the best. Well.
All right.
We'll talk soon.
All right. Good to hear your voice.
Likewise. And say, give Sarah a big hug for me, too.
I will.
Okay. Talk to you later.
All right. Sounds good.
Bye. Musings with Monse, Artists and Their Honest Stories, is audio produced by the amazing Aaron Mooring. And the beautiful theme music you hear is by Heather Maloney.